Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will Smith.
I'm Adam Savage.
And I'm Norm Chan.
Hey, this is a really big gun.
we've all got guns.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, let's treat them like guns. People did also call out in the One Day Build video that when you're waving that blaster around,
now
your finger's on the trigger.
Yes. So, okay, then let me address that very specifically. I do not have... Yeah, there it is. It's pointing at you. Right.
Why are you pointing that gun at me, Norm?
So I do not own a working pistol. I do not own a working gun. We have a bunch for Mythbusters. I have a gun license, and I own a couple of pistols. They've both been demilled, and their parts of them are in here. So yeah. In the middle of this is a Bulldog 44 caliber,
mm-hmm.
But the firing pin has been removed. You cannot... and the barrel extension that I have for it is such that you couldn't actually put a bullet into mm-hmm. this thing, you would not be able to get it to fire. So for me, I am, it's true, kind of dumbly cavalier in here because it's kind of like a playroom. And I think of it like a playroom.
But you know, even if you think of it like a playroom in your fantasy when you're holding a prop gun, when I hold a prop gun and I treat it like a real gun, that enhances the fantasy.
It totally does. It totally does. And, you know, the armor that we work with a lot, Alexander Jason, would castigate me for swinging the pistol around. And I appreciate those comments. That is absolutely something that I'll think about the next time we're waving them around. But all of these guns are fake. This is my cheap all-metal airsoft replica of Jules's gun from Pulp Fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that it's not correct because this is a Colt.
Norman Chan, good God, stop pointing that at me.
This is effectively a Colt 1911 frame. In fact, Jules's gun from Pulp Fiction is, while it looks like a 45 caliber, and he says Mr. 9mm here,
yeah,
he's actually correct. It is a Star Model B 9mm pistol, and there's a really good reason that it's a 9mm. In fact, much of the time in movies when you see what you think is a 1911 Colt,
huh,
ACP 45 caliber, it's a 9mm Star Model B. And that's because in movies... For years, the 45 caliber blanks were really low quality and they would jam the guns all the time. And so armorers hate 45 caliber automatics. So the Star Model B, the 9mm blank rounds are really great and much more reliable. And so armorers love those. And so that's the reason that Jules is holding.
And it's passable.
What's that?
One's passable as the other.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And it's one of my unrealized plans, and I want to do this one day, is to actually buy a real, excuse me, my Diet Coke is making me burp, is to buy a real Star Model B chrome and put some real military-style pearl, mother-of-pearl handles on mm-hmm. it and make a real Jules gun.
I learned something fascinating this morning,
yeah,
thanks to the internet. I learned that... And this should have occurred to me before, but I never watched Pulp Fiction and Kill Bill back to back. And when Uma Thurman is describing Fox Force 5 in Pulp Fiction,
yeah,
she is describing Kill Bill.
Yes, exactly.
Blew me away.
Oh, wow. No,
and
I got that the moment I was watching Kill Bill. I was like, oh, look, it's Fox Force 5.
But Bruce Willis picks up Bud's pawned sword in the pawn shop.
Oh,
his Hanzo sword.
No.
Yeah, that's what the internet told me. I don't know if it's true. I'll have to go back and watch Pulp Fiction and Kill Bill as a result.
Interesting.
Yes.
It's really good. Is it the anniversary of Pulp Fiction or something this year?
20th anniversary.
20th anniversary. There's a really great story online that's just the history of Pulp Fiction, how it was made. And
I've been reading a lot about it lately. I guess the Wikipedia page and the IMDb page both have beautiful long lists of interesting facts. And
yeah.
I mean, my wife and I watch Pulp Fiction. We end up watching it like once a year.
Yeah, so do we.
I showed it to my kids recently for the first time.
That had to be fun.
My 14-year-olds.
Did they get it?
Oh, yeah. They loved it. I had to leave during the anal rape scene.
Yeah.
And I don't look. The fact is actually, I didn't sit them down and show them. They saw it at a sleepover.
Okay.
And then we watched it again together because they felt so guilty. They know how important and how influential that movie is for me.
Oh, for me, that was the first time. I mean, I love Star Wars and I love Indiana Jones and all that. But I was a freshman in college that year, and it was an absolute revelation about what film could be.
So important. Yeah. I mean, I walked out of the movie theater just thinking something really important just happened to me.
Yeah, I don't know what that movie was, but I want to watch it again, yeah. And I want more like this.
And every time I watch it, something new happens, or I just like, oh, I love watching this progress. You know, the first close up of the movie, Jules is looking over at Brett, you know, while mm-hmm. sipping his soda and in that look in his eyes. I just purchased from the Replica Prop Forum a really nice replica of the briefcase.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
With the glowy lights and everything?
No. I'm doing that, though.
Okay.
I actually just got the LED strip lights from Amazon, nice. Plus the dimmers.
Let's do a video of that. That sounds like a good idea.
And I have an interesting idea for it, which is, I'm going to make it glowy. Mm-hmm. Toying around with how to make the glow, when you look at it, something beautiful that would also be a little difficult to describe. Like, I want to achieve
seems something. Like it should be like a hologram
for
or something.
The person opening it. Yeah, yeah, a lenticular, a hologram, maybe a laser cut mandala out of like translucent colored acrylic. Some varying.
Maybe a huge kaleidoscope that just keeps turning and makes, you know.
Believe me, I've been thinking about all of these things. But I brought it home and I showed it to my son, thing two, and he goes, "What is that?" And I said, I've been through too much shit this morning just to hand this over to your dumb ass. And he goes, "Oh, Pulp Fiction!" And that's like, now I love having kids. We can all watch the movies together.
I'm gonna have to go home and show the baby Pulp Fiction. I wonder what she'll think.
You know, the
dad of the year.
So if I think we should explain that we started out thinking, and this is a segue about movie influences, because it's a question that came up.
Yeah,
and. We jumped sort of right into it unwitting. Well, with the movie guns.
That didn't happen by accident,
no,
Adam.
No, it didn't. But in the end, we didn't segue out like we normally do.
The defining characteristic of the podcast, as far as I'm concerned, is that you can't let a perfect segue go without mentioning how perfect the segue was.
So, Pulp Fiction. Pulp Fiction's way up at the top of my list. You know, the thing I said a while back, which is that everyone's got at least 50 films in their top 10. The fact is Pulp Fiction's in Pulp Fiction is not one of those 50. It is one of the 10.
Yeah. The real 10.
Yeah, the real 10. It's so vital. It's so unique. You know, Tarantino's, the formula he's been playing with for Inglourious Basterds and for Django, which is, take somebody or take a group of people, take these characters who are super badass and put them in the worst situation imaginable. I love the simplicity of that as an exercise. But Pulp Fiction is a totally different plot, right? I mean,
it's three.
It's three plots. It's all these playing around with a gangster movie and playing around with what happens after plot of a gangster movie.
The mob boss's guy takes the mob boss girlfriend out.
Yeah, the hitman on a hit, but you spend the rest of the morning with them. But it never doesn't thrill me to sit through that movie. And moreover, I've watched the DVD extras a couple of times in which Tarantino includes, I love him.
Are you an Elvis man or a Beatles man?
Exactly. Yeah. The whole pre-conversation with Mia. And it's super instructive because they have that whole conversation where she says, "You Elvis man or Beatles man?" And they have this back and forth about it, and then later on she says an Elvis man like yourself should be able to understand
and that stays
that.
In the movie
that stays in the movie, and Tarantino's brilliance is understanding all he needed to communicate all the rest of that conversation.
It's like a compressed version of that of that 10-minute conversation. The thing about movies to me is that a movie like Pulp Fiction, especially, I come back to it different times in my life, and I take away completely different things.
Yep.
When I first saw it, and I was 20 years old, 18 years old, the part that stuck with me was the hitman, hitman arc. As I get older, the Butch arc is I feel for Butch. Butch has made bad choices and has had a hard life and is put in an impossible situation.
But after
impossible situation.
And how amazing is it that, you know, so there's the scenes between him and what's his girlfriend's name?
The French woman.
Yeah. But the scenes between him and her are so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
They're so loving, and they feel so intimate to be there.
Even when he's livid, when he is losing his mind about the watch, she is afraid of him. He's a violent, very strong man. She's a tiny little woman.
Yeah.
And he's there's still love.
There's still a real sweetness about it. And the fact that you could watch it repeatedly and it's never boring. You know, that Julia, when he's like, it's a thing between my wife and I when it, you know, where one of us is doing a bad impression, the other one goes, I hate that stupid Mongoloid voice, Julia. I mean, Pulp Fiction is full of one-liners that are almost a constant stream of one-liners in my relationship with my wife, because we're both film addicts. We love great films, and really specifically, we love watching them together, pausing, talking about them, keeping going, rewinding, watching things, analyzing them, breaking them down. And Pulp Fiction is just, it's always thrilling.
The thing we do is we'll play board games, and the background for the board game, when the other, because you play a board game, you have to think about it. The worst thing in the world is waiting for the other person to take their turn.
Yeah,
at least I get to watch Pulp Fiction while she's taking 20 minutes to make her decision.
So what movie influences?
Well, first off, we have to do the movie list because we promised this like a year ago.
We did
now.
And it was silly. So because in honor of the Oscars happening somewhere close to this,
maybe
podcast,
a week ago, yeah, something like that.
Let's commit to doing it. Let's commit to doing it within the next like 2 weeks.
Maybe let's come up with a short list of stuff to watch.
Yeah.
And we'll share those and talk amongst ourselves and share it with you guys.
Perfect.
And then maybe say May.
And I think the trick is let's each choose, we'll do this afterwards. We'll each choose two movies the others haven't seen.
Okay.
Mm. And then each of us will have to watch four movies in that period of time. And then we can really talk about
perfect
those
movie club.
Yeah.
That's club. A great plan.
Yes.
In general, you know, it's funny. I went through this phase in my early 20s when I moved out here to San Francisco. I was 23. Mm-hmm. And I've been here 22 years. I was
Cat just creeps up on you, doesn't it?
Yeah. I was 23. And I remember sitting in the movies watching Joy Luck Club,
mm-hmm.
which is, I guess, 91, 92.
It was when I was in college or high school, probably.
Maybe a little later. At any rate, I remember sitting watching Joy Luck Club and being quite moved by it. My father was ill.
Mm-hmm.
My dad passed away in 99 of Alzheimer's after a really long and terrible bout with it. And anyone who's gone through that, it's just an unforgiving and terrible thing to go through. And Joy Luck Club, which is about family heritage and about lineage and about mothers and daughters, but you know, easily transferable in my mind to fathers and sons, really affected me emotionally. But I remember specifically being in the theater and being mad that I was being manipulated. Right? Like, oh, movies, they just manipulate your emotions. It's not real. And now I'm like, manipulate my emotions, please.
I need to feel something.
Yes.
Right. Well, that's one of the things that happens.
And you appreciate the craft.
Yes.
As you get older, though, with few exceptions that are notable, like I don't think you feel anything as strongly when you're 35 as you did when you were 15 years old.
Oh, I'm not so sure about that.
Not anything. The kids thing is, let's take the kids thing off the table.
Okay.
There's strong potential for emotion there that I'm just discovering. but on a day-to-day basis, nothing has the intensity that everything had when you were a sophomore in high school.
It feels like life and death.
Everything is the end of the world when you're 15 years old.
This is actually... I'm going to segue from movies to television and briefly talk about Joss Whedon's brilliance with Buffy, in that the brilliance of Buffy, and I read this in an essay by an old friend of my wife's named Joshua Clover, I think it's his essay, about how the fact that Buffy takes those feelings of life and death and makes them actually life and death.
I've got to watch Buffy. I've never watched
right?
Buffy. My confession.
In Buffy, you sleep with a guy and he wakes up and he's actually
evil.
A demon.
It's like the worst morning after ever.
The worst morning after in all of history is hers and Angels, right? That's where the
spoilers,
it becomes
guys.
So
Come
universal.
On.
Oh no, that's not a spoiler.
Okay.
Because it gets so much worse after that. The Jenny Calendar episode.
Yeah. There's
there are some absolutely heartbreaking, wrenching moments. Okay.
That is the brilliance.
Yeah.
It's things are so relatable. But mm-hmm. in a fantastic way.
Totally. So going back to movie influences.
We've talked about Raiders a ton.
Yeah, we talked about Raiders. Have we talked much about Brazil? I mean...
You talked about Brazil a little bit. I've my memories of Brazil are really hazy because there's like so many versions of that movie available now.
Right.
I don't remember which one I've seen and which one's the one to watch.
There's only two to see.
Okay. You watched in theaters when you worked at the theater.
Yeah. I worked at the Astor Playhouse in New York in the mid-80s, and Brazil, that was where Brazil had its 7-month run. And so I sat through it probably once a day.
Okay.
While projecting it for 6 months.
That's a lot of Brazil.
It remains one of the most sort of primordial influences for me. And it's so beautiful. It is so beautiful. It is Terry Gilliam's is so smart about the way he makes that movie. First of all, the effects are beautiful.
He's smart about all of his movies.
Yeah, no. I know. But this was the one that like, and I grew up in school loving Time Bandits. Here's the thing about Brazil and the effects. They're all in camera. They're all miniatures and
really?
Forced perspective. The Jonathan Pryce, when he's flying, they built a puppet with a motorized wings that they put lead in the arms of and then filmed with a high frame rate camera so that when they slowed it down, you could see the momentum of the wings working against the hands.
Wow.
Yeah. That's not stop motion animation. That's live action shot.
Well,
high speed.
They used a lot of weird stuff too, like the lenticular, the refracting screens that you used to put in front of your TV.
Yep, kind of all over.
All
that kind of,
and I think you have one up there somewhere.
I do, as I recall. The Brazil came out very close to the same, if not the same year that the first Batman movie came out. Tim Burton's Batman,
89.
I loved the first Batman movie.
See, I didn't because And Anton Furst got a lot of attention for that, and he's a wonderful production designer. But I felt that the execution of Batman paled in comparison to the execution of Brazil. I thought that these shots of Gotham, which were all composite shots, didn't make me feel like I was in there, whereas in Brazil, I felt I was in that space, in that city.
So for me, the composite shots made it feel more like a real place to me than which I know is kind of counterintuitive, but I looked at it and I was like, oh, this is the most amazing. This is the gothic place
like
I've ever seen.
It has a comic book quality to it.
Yeah, it was. It felt more like the what I was expecting, I guess.
Well, so, and this actually segues nicely to what I think of as a key thing about film influence is that you can never predict what your deal breakers are going to be.
Yeah.
Right? Well, like you were just, before we started, you were talking about the new Total Recall. I never really liked the first Total Recall.
Really?
I know that's slightly blasphemous, but I never thought much of the first one.
Well, charming.
It is charming, but it's also like, it's one of those films
Quiet
where
voice norm.
They try and create a whole world and they just don't quite, and it doesn't feel quite big enough.
If that movie had come out 5 years later when Arnold wasn't making those kinds of movies, when somebody who wasn't a gigantic muscle guy was making those movies, not that I don't love Arnold, but there's a weird schism between Arnold Schwarzenegger and a kind of medium smart science fiction movie.
When you watch the movie, it's the context of when you watch.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
There are things that it's like you said, it really is true that the new Total Recall makes every bad decision you could possibly make.
Anytime there's an opportunity to do something smart or something dumb, they go dumb. Every time. A hole through the center of the planet. It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life.
And yet, I will defend that if you watched it in French with English subtitles, or even in French without subtitles, it is a gorgeous-looking movie. In fact,
you want it to be a Luc Besson movie.
Well, you just have to stop paying attention to what people are saying because it's so awful.
Yeah,
but from a visual standpoint, it's gorgeous, and the world they create is actually way up there in terms of
the
filmic,
grimy streets and
earth, non-modern,
and the production design between
world.
Australia and the UK. Like it's mm-hmm. there's you never look at that and you never don't know where they are.
It's
right?
A
they did a really great job
city,
with that stuff,
but done with modern technology.
And you know, you, all these background plates and stuff as they're running through the city, and all these cities having kind of grown organically, and everything's like Kowloon City. It's beautiful, beautiful.
But I mean, if you
but
look,
it's not enough to sit through that movie.
God, it's so bad. I watched it on an airplane. It was bad on it. If a movie's bad on an airplane, it's real bad.
I watched it in a hotel.
I
felt like I should get my money back.
We had the seats with
both,
the free
both
so it worked out.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say if you use that standard of visually stunning movies, then you can look at The Cell or Prometheus.
And those are two interesting examples, because Prometheus is just genuinely gorgeous.
Like the scene where David's in the Forerunner, the Founder spaceship, and the stuff turns is one of the most gorgeous things I've seen in movies in 3D. It was amazing.
All the way around. Yeah. All the way around. It's a stunningly beautiful film. Now, The Cell is a lovely film, but none of that shit is theirs. And now let me explain.
Oh, he cribbed that from everybody, right?
They cribbed it from everybody. Yeah, mostly from Matthew Barney. Mostly, I can't remember if I should call him a sculptor or a video artist, because he's a filmmaker. He's an art filmmaker whose films play in museums. The Cremaster series. Mm-hmm. They are opaque. They are often quite anti-audience, anti-narrative. They are weird and they make you feel funny, and they're
uncomfortable
funny, yeah. And beautiful, and you know, they're all of these things, and they practically lifted just shot for shot all this stuff from Matthew Barney and the Brothers Quay So the Cell enrages me because I don't feel
which
like
which is so funny, because then you talk about a movie like Brazil was all practical effects, and then Tarzan's next movie also all practical and much better, The Fall.
Oh, yes, totally.
And same director, but completely different, a little more mature.
Right.
I never saw that.
I have not seen it either, and I've always wanted to see it.
Maybe it's on the list.
There you go.
I got to think about this list. There's a lot of pressure there.
So for me, the influence has happened in a few different ways. There's a kind of a cultural influence where there are characters I love, like The Philadelphia Story. Is another one of those films like Pulp Fiction that's absolutely just like bang way up at the top. I probably watch it every 18 months, and I'm talking Philadelphia Story. That's Jimmy Stewart, Katharine Hepburn, Cary Grant.
Oh, okay. I was thinking
High Society with Frank Sinatra.
I always get
Grace
the Philadelphia
Kelly and Bing Crosby. It might not be Grace Kelly.
Everything is Philadelphia.
I was thinking about the Philadelphia Experiment, which is about time travel, and as I recall, quite bad.
And not Philadelphia with Tom Hanks, which is terrific.
Yeah, that's a good movie. Denzel and Tom Hanks. Yeah.
So there's movies like that. Then there's, for me, movies that were aesthetically super important. And obviously, as a maker, aesthetics...
You know what? That means, if you're breaking this down, it means... Movie club needs to be broken down also.
Oh yeah.
So if we do two movies, it should be two like aesthetic movies or
it's a good question. Because
I think we need to have a whole podcast where we talk about what movie club
is. Well, because again, there are categories of Brazil is completely important to my makeup as a maker, as a storyteller, as a filmmaker, as a sculptor. I'm not sure I could sit through it today. I think I've maxed out my number of Brazil viewings a long time
every
ago.
Every day for 6 months.
And I've seen all the versions.
Yeah.
I've seen the Sid Sheinberg cut that played on television. I've seen the European cut. I've seen the Criterion box for Brazil is one of the great things.
Oh, it's amazing. It's like 14 discs in there.
And you know, there are plenty of movies where you watch once and you love and appreciate the hell out of it, but that's the only time you want to see it.
I liked Leaving Las Vegas. I saw it in the theaters. I bought the DVD and it's still in the wrapper.
I'll tell you that The Master, which I love,
yeah,
which I really loved and have seen few things as remarkable as how beautiful the filmmaking is, how incredible Joaquin Phoenix and Philip Seymour Hoffman's performances are, and Amy Adams. And I'm not sure I want to sit through it again.
Well, but
I'm not sure I can. Yes. So there are films that are important. They're not necessarily your favorites. Mm-hmm. There are films that... are perfect. Like I said, I think Raiders is a perfect movie. Galaxy Quest is a perfect movie. I don't think Blade Runner is a perfect movie. I think Blade Runner has some significant flaws in it. I think its plot has some clunky chunks in it. Nonetheless, it's crazy important on a whole bunch of other levels. So the reason there's 50 films in my top 10 is because my top 10 is broken down into a bunch of categories.
Yeah. Venn diagram.
You're high fidelity-ing this top 10.
I totally am. You know, so all those ways in which the films influenced me, each of them has their own categories, and there's other films in those categories. You know, Guillermo del Toro is practically a whole genre.
I was going to say, you probably have a Guillermo category, I guess.
There might just be a generic Guillermo category where, you know, Devil's Backbone, Pan's Labyrinth, and Kronos, and all those films just set.
Yeah, Pan's Labyrinth is high on my list, but it's another one of those ones that it's like every 10 years maybe. because it's real grim.
And then Hellboy, which again, I could watch any given day of the week.
Yeah.
You know, Hellboy loves you.
Cool. And I think that about does it for time for us today.
Oh.
We should go back to do this again.
Absolutely. So we're going to commit to doing a film thing by the end of March.
Let's say end of March.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
Let's get aggressive. At least one film thing.
Yeah.
We'll one do film, the first.
One, okay. One film
we'll
club.
Space it out.
All right. Yeah. Oh, okay. Wow. I got to get back to
great.
Work.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Thanks, see y'all guys. Next week.
Oh, hey. Thanks for supporting us on iTunes. Your comments are really appreciated. I'm taking Will's
role. Yeah. No, that's good. Somebody's here to do it. And we'll be back next Tuesday with another episode of Still Untitled.
All right.
See y'all later.
Bye, guys. Bye.